Off the Ball, GAA.
I remember at one stage, all right, lying on the ground, all right, and the lights going out. And that's all I remember.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I believe in my county, and I suppose they're good at football. They just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12. I love playing 10. I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
Thank you for all the supporters. Thank you for the team. Thank you, France. Merci la France. Merci les baguettes. Merci les croissants. Je vous aime. I love you.
Hey! Hello, hello. What's the crack? Happy Thursday. I'm Susanna, and this is Word on the Street, where every week we take a sporting event, something that's dominating the headlines, and we take it to the public and we find out what they think. Good morning, Eve and Rachel.
Good morning. It's weird being in here in the morning.
It is. It feels like the day is kind of topsy-turvy.
It does. I quite like it, though. I feel a bit more awake at this time. I feel like when we usually record around 3 or 4, I've just had lunch. I'm a little bit sleepy.
It's the slump.
It is the slump. And you're trying to, like, get the adrenaline and the energy to have a good pod, and you're just like, ugh.
One downside, when me and Eve were trying to get everyone's opinions this morning on the street, everyone was going to work.
Yeah, I'd say they were looking at you like, go away.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, on my morning commute.
Yeah, people were so friendly, but just like practically tapping the watch. Like, why would you be asking me my opinion on the Ryder Cup at 8:45 on a Tuesday?
So fair, I'd probably have my headphones in looking at you like you're going crazy.
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't have to witness that.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
But yes, the topic dominating the headlines this week, we're calling this, I think this is episode 20, and we're calling it Nightmare in New York. Eve, that was very clever.
That was my, yeah, thank you very much. That was my coinage this morning.
But we had to talk about it, like Ryder Cup. There was nothing else really dominating the headlines as much as this, all week as well.
Which was really funny, because if you had said to me kind of last week that the NFL and the Ryder Cup would both be on the same day, and Europe being so far ahead at the beginning of Sunday, be like, well, the Ryder, I guess the NFL is going to be the bigger news story than the Ryder Cup.
Yes.
And then it turned into the most dramatic, you know, tense few hours of golf you could ever watch.
Stop it. It's funny because exactly the same as that. Well, actually, I probably wouldn't have thought it was going to be that interesting full stop going into the weekend. I don't know if I'm getting older and hence my like tastes are changing in what I enjoy. And that's why I enjoyed it so much. I don't know if Ryder Cup is just specifically really exciting compared to other golfing events, or golf is just getting better. I can't tell which of the three it is, but I was hooked.
I think it's exposure therapy for you. Like, you've been working on Golf Weekly in the Ryan Line. So
I do love it.
It's exposure therapy.
You have Stockholm Syndrome with golf.
Maybe, but it was class.
Oh, it was. I think it's the Ryder Cup itself.
Yeah.
Golf is so usually an individual sport, and it can be quite, yeah, individualistic as well. So to see a team-based kind of competition, especially when it's Europe against America, you know, it brings out such...
Yeah.
Listen, watching it was incredibly exciting. I was about to say it's you know, loyalties and division, and it's a lot more tense than your usual golf tournaments, and I think we definitely saw that at Bethpage.
Yeah, no, I would agree. It's also like there's like bromances.
Yeah.
I was like shipping Rory and Larry the whole time going around. I know they already had a bromance.
I love their friendship.
I love it so much. But it was like heightened at this because they were receiving so much abuse all of the time. I feel like their like camaraderie was even more, and they were so like that clip of Lowry when somebody shouts from the crowd and Rory's about to take his shot and he's like get out the way, I'm coming.
I'm gonna call out my dad, actually, because on Friday he goes, "Why, Jesus, Rory's kind of taking all, he's doing all the work and Lowry's just his sidekick." And I was like, no, it's really important Lowry's there for like to support his friend, and because, you know, Rory is he's a golfer who can get in his head quite easily, ironically, the in your head chance. But also, I was like, no, it's not that Larry is a personality hire, but he's such a huge part of that team that he needed to be there. It makes sense. I think he was Luke Donald's first captain pick. And then I was delighted on Sunday to see that it was Larry who sunk the putt to retain it.
So good for him, especially he gets so much slack all the time being like, oh, isn't it great that Rory won the Masters? And even when he did that interview not that long ago, being like, I kind of want to talk about me.
Yeah,
like, exactly. I'm also one of the best golfers in the world. Can we chat about me and not my friend?
100%.
And he said it in such a nice way as well, like respectfully. Just so glad he got his moment on the stage, and what a moment.
What a moment. Incredible. The heart palpitations. This is a big statement, but I think I was happier than when Rory won the Masters.
Wow. Yeah. Do you know what? I think I would kind of agree, because when Rory won the Masters, I just was exhausted. It was the most stressful day, and I wasn't even there, and it wasn't even me. But the kind of feeling of euphoria, knowing that America weren't going to complete that comeback, which would have, I couldn't have left the house for the next week.
No, I there's still so
many, still so many American football fans around Dublin. If I had to walk around and hear these American accents talking about that, how much Europe would have bottled it had they lost, I don't think I could have handled that. So thank you, Shane Lowry, for saving all of Ireland.
Also, just as you said, the fact that it was him. And like
icing on the cake for
we
us.
We love Rory, and we love when he does well, and especially winning the Masters, all the heartache, sorry, that built up to that. But there's something, as you say, Lowry has always been so kind, so supportive. And like, even in that interview that you were talking about, you know, he spoke about how proud he is of Rory and how he's never been so, I remember when he won the Masters, he said, "I've never been so happy for someone to win something that I wanted so badly."
Yeah.
And then for this, like, and it meant so much to him, the Ryder Cup full stop, the whole event, he didn't even talk about how, you know, I've been in the shadows, that kind of thing. It was just, this means so much to me. And he was like, he couldn't breathe.
Yeah, he got so emotional at the end. It was beautiful. It was perfect.
I was so scared he was going to have a heart attack. But no, also, as you said, I felt like with all the abuse, not only did it bring kind of more eyeballs, I think, I'm not sure as many people would have been tuned into the Ryder Cup had the articles not been coming out about all the abuse that McIlroy was getting, and Lowry as well, and just the Europeans in general. But also, as you said, I think that made it all the sweeter when they did first retain and then win, because I was just thinking, if America win this, does it justify that behaviour in a weird way?
Yeah, that it kind of would have worked out for them, because I think the issue and why Europe struggled so much on the Sunday, I mean, they only won one match, which was Aalborg, the Swedish golfer.
I know, that was crazy.
And I feel like they were just exhausted when it came to Sunday. Like, they had been so dominant for the Friday, Saturday. And I mean, being on a golf course for most of the day, like, they start 7 o'clock in the morning around that time and they're in for most of the day. And for the likes of Rory, Tommy Fleetwood, who had been doing all of the foursomes and the four balls, that they're doing everything so far, just the mental toll that it takes to hear the constant abuse is exhausting in and of itself. So I feel like if the American tactic had worked, where they focused all in on the singles and had won it on the Sunday, then the fans could nearly have said, yeah, we wore them down on the Friday, Saturday.
Especially because it was singles out on Sunday. You know, Larry and McIlroy could kind of like bounce off each other when they were playing together. And you even saw like them shouting at the crowd.
Yeah.
Say when McIlroy was going to putt, Shane was looking after him and vice versa. But when they were on their own, obviously if you got your caddy, but it was a vulnerable state to be in for them. But like the abuse.
Yes, I know. It was crazy. Let's play a clip, because you guys were out chatting to people this morning and we had Alistair, which, great name, by the way. I do love the name Alistair. And he was chatting about what he thought about the Ryder Cup abuse.
Do you think the Americans crossed the line?
Probably, yeah. I think it's like, especially like with his wife, like as in when you're a sports player, there's a bit of a, you kind of have to deal with this stuff, and to a degree, but like she's a spectator just like them. It's like turning around to someone else in the crowd and abusing them. So I think that's not on at all. Like, she's done nothing, neither of them have, but she's quite literally just there to support her husband. So I think that's really, really harsh.
Have you gone to other sporting events?
I've actually been to baseball over in the States, and it's like even similar. You can hear, maybe not to the same degree, but they do love kind of really roaring and abusing in the similar way you saw at the Ryder Cup, especially when they started drinking.
I think he lands on a good point. The fact that, okay, abuse is somewhat common in a lot of sports. We see it at athletes. Why are you hitting out at his wife and his family?
Yeah, like a lot of the golf players quite famously travel with their spouses and their kids. Like at the Masters, the first couple of days, you've all the kids on the golf course trying to sink their own putts and everything. And for...
Oh, I love that.
It's so cute. Sorry.
So cringy.
Is it? No, I love
Rachel.
It. Rachel. The TikTok before the Masters of Fleetwood's kid, Lowry, and McIlroy's daughter.
So
it's cute visually, but like when they go on and on and on about it, like,
did you see the, have you ever
too
seen,
cringy for me,
seen the interview of Tommy Fleetwood's kid being asked about,
yes, and he's like, I'm just gonna keep trying, I wasn't there today, but I'm just gonna keep working hard,
try me hardest,
I'm like, eat, I could eat you, like, that's just adorable.
So cute.
Rachel's not here for,
no,
the,
no, it's cute, but are they across the line with the cringe at that?
So to see, like, Erica McElroy had a drink thrown like at her head, now, yeah, that is so far beyond, like, at football stadiums, you know, if a top of a bottle or a coin or anything is thrown at the pitch and could potentially hit a player or anything, you know, you're instantly ejected. That's very much not on. And but as Alistair mentioned there, at least if it hits someone at the football, it's actually a player.
Yeah.
This is his wife. And I mean, in fairness, all the members of Team Europe at the post-cup press conference, they just won it. I think Justin Rose made a point.
And
he
Larry,
goes,
yeah.
And Larry goes, I just really want to commend Erica McElroy for, you know, she didn't bring it into the dressing room, even though she probably had, she could have had cause to. No one would have blamed her if she had kind of went in and said, this has just happened to me, like, this is ridiculous, blah, blah, blah.
And she stayed out there, which I thought was very impressive.
Yeah, like, it was, yeah, so defiant.
Because I think I would have, like, I'm weak, I would have probably just cried. Especially after, like, that would have been the cherry on top for me. I think after you're hearing abuse about your marriage and your kid, yeah, and just your life, like your whole life, especially that, you know, they live quite publicly, I suppose. They've had stuff, yes, about their marriage in the past. So then to be dealing with it on a really abusive level for hours, and then to have a drink thrown at my head.
And in that close proximity. It's not like she's in,
no, she's not
an untouchable
away
area, yeah, where she's like, yeah, they're giving me grief, but I can't be touched here.
No, I just would have cried, and I wouldn't have come back. And like, because I was reading up about the history of kind of the Ryder Cup and the fact that this does happen sometimes, and it's not that uncommon, which is
sad,
worrying,
but,
in itself,
yeah.
But they talk about a lot about Brooklyn in 1999,
yeah,
and there was a guy, Colin Montgomery, his father left the course, he left the golf course because he just couldn't deal with all of the abuse that he was hearing about his kid, so like he just left and didn't come back. So I thought it was very impressive that Erica, like, she just, you're right, it, like, what a picture to send, what a F you in a way of, yeah, not actually saying F you.
Yeah, absolutely. It was the best thing. It would have been so tough for her, but it was the best thing she could have done, because they were like defending themselves all along with their golf, and it's easier for them. Like, they can sink a putt and beat their chests and, yeah, say F you, stick the fingers up or whatever, but it's not going to work if she does that, because she's just going to entice them even more.
Yeah.
For her to just stand there so stoically was probably the most impressive performance of the weekend.
Facts. Yeah. And they always say, like, these people just want a reaction. It's the same online, the kind of, you know, anonymous people in the comments. They just want you to react. That's how they get their bread and butter.
Yeah.
By her not reacting, she didn't let them win, in a way.
Gavin Cooney, who, friend of the show, Gavin Cooney, had an incredible article out after that really awful Saturday at the Ryder Cup when the abuse was kind of at its height. And he had followed McElroy and Larry the whole way around. So he saw kind of up close the, like, vitriolic levels of fat shaming, of anti-Irish chants, homophobic chants, misogynistic chants and abuse. And he said it basically seems like it's different than it used to be, something like Brookline 99. It felt like it was the age of anonymous keyboard warriors, mm, that people now feel comfortable actually saying this stuff out loud to these athletes, as if, you know, they're millionaire athletes and they're not real human beings. And even though they're standing, like, probably Rory McIlroy could be where you are, Susanna, compared, yeah, to me, like, not even a foot. And, you know, and you're just being hurled abuse at constantly while you're doing your job. Like, at the end of the day, this is his profession. He's just at work.
Yeah, it's like someone sitting over there shouting at us. And,
yeah,
you should,
exactly.
What did, yeah, you say that for? That's useless.
There was somebody else who sent us in a WhatsApp who was at the Ryder Cup. It was funny. He actually sent us a photo of him and his wife in the background of a big Ryder Cup photo with all the Team Europe, and they were wearing Kerry jerseys. And he was like, that's me and my wife in the Kerry jerseys.
Beautiful.
Which is very cute.
Classic.
But he said the behaviour of the US fans was just so confusing. They'd rather abuse the European players than cheer their own fans, which is something McElroy spoke about a lot as well.
Yeah.
He said it was toxic, vile and aggressive, not funny or witty. No self-policing either. Most Americans were embarrassed by these people, but they did nothing to stop it. Which I do think that's quite interesting, because we've heard a lot about, you know, there was only 40, I think, it's obviously not 40, but I remember them saying on Golf Weekly that, you know, there was 40 out of, what, 50,000 fans who did this. It's not all Americans, which I 100% agree with. Like, not all Americans are like this. But the fact that nobody turned to them and went, here, lad, like, just shut up.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I would do that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. Does it just speak to how hostile of an environment it was that it didn't feel safe to do that? And that it was nearly like a mob mentality that people were getting behind it, because you even see in some of the videos, like, the park rangers that were there and the police are laughing along with some of this. So if you're seeing whoever's supposed to be in charge and like an authority figure at that not dealing with it, are you going to respond? Are you going to stand up? I know technically you should, but in the heat of the moment like that, it seemed so tense that I don't know, were people afraid to
It's a lot to say I would, because you think you would, but sometimes crowd control, like, or the effect of a crowd can kind of sweep you up and you get a bit. Also, you know, they were rooting against the Europeans, the US fans, even the ones who weren't shouting abuse. They probably were looking at it and thinking, well, I'm not going to shut them up because that makes me look like I'm anti-American, like all this kind of stuff. But I do think it's what you said there about some of the kind of officers smirking at some of the stuff. Like, I do wonder, all the clips that have gone around where we see Rory, like, or Mac, or Lowry, sorry, kind of come along and they go, him, kick him out now. Were they actually removed? Because part of me thinks, and I know we've got a lot of comments saying this as well, I'll find one in a second, but if they had gone hard at it the first, when this first started happening, in the first hour, they take the first 20 people who make a bad comment and go, I'm actually kicking you out. I'm not sure people would have rode the wave as much as they did.
If you had a material consequence.
Yeah.
For, like, there was a video of somebody hurling horrific abuse at McIlroy, and then McIlroy turns around, points and goes, him, get him out. And then you hear the spectator who was abusing him go, for what?
Mm.
And it's like, well, take a wild guess, buddy.
Yeah, it was Peter on Instagram. I found it here. He said, just eject the first 20 lads, that go overboard on the first morning might help. Maybe have decent stewards. And then Jackie also said, find them, ban them, takes a teaspoon of vinegar to burn a gallon of milk. Which I've never heard that saying in my life.
No, but love it.
Love it also. But it's so true. I think if you actually think that there's going to be a consequence for my action when I shout this rude, vulgar thing, I know they were hammered and hopped up and whatever. I still think part of your brain would be like, oh, I have to be a little bit careful here.
Especially with golf being the stereotypical kind of gentleman's sport, I feel like if there was enough people in the crowd to be like, you're making a fool of yourself, you're not helping anybody, maybe peer pressure would have helped. I was interested by one Instagram comment, and specifically someone called Jimmy, about kind of the toxic fan culture. He goes, I'd encourage it, to be honest. Golf is one of the most boring sports out there, played by dull men wearing shit trousers and gilets. Now, the Ryder Cup is inherently more exciting because of the rivalry aspect, the team aspect and everything like that. And what makes it so good and what makes watching the European fans so exciting is that Europeans are really, really good at chance. And they can make the atmosphere, you know, popping and everything.
Stop in your head, Rory, Rory.
So
I thought that was brilliant.
My personal favourite one was what they shouted at Bryson DeChambeau, which was, you're French and you know you are. Which I just thought was fantastic.
It's so lame. I think it's hilarious that the European chants are so lame.
I don't think they're lame.
They're better than the American MC standing up trying to... It was such a hard watch. Like, trying to get someone... to get a crowd of people singing along to a shocking chant.
Yeah.
And then obviously the crowd takes over and give it their F you Rory.
And then she got
and
so
then
stressed.
She got involved and said it and then had to resign the next day.
I think she was feeling like such a failure because none of her chants were working. And they say she was like struggling to rile up the crowd. And then when they took over with the F you chant, she just went, oh, I've riled them up.
Yeah. You can tell it was just absolute panic stations for her, and I actually felt kind of sorry for her because it was probably just like one moment. Like, she was obviously dying
a death
out there with what she was trying to do with those chants. But yeah, it's right. It's a funnier chance. There was one clip of an American, Rory's trying to like undo the top button of his t-shirt, and an American fan shouts at him and is like, you don't need a button to choke that. Rory. And you can see him and Shane Lowry actually turn around and go, now that's good.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
The fact that they're commending an American fan for taking the piss out of them, because they're like, this is good crack. This is what we want. Like, and don't be shouting it when I'm hitting it. I think that was a real example of just the poor taste from the American fans. Like, obviously what they were saying was shocking, but shout it when they're walking up the fairway, don't do it when they're addressing their ball. And that was probably one of the biggest issues that the European players had. They were like, it's not fair that you're shouting when we're trying to hit the ball.
Yeah.
Shout whatever at me when I'm walking up the fairway.
Yeah, well, that and the abuse against their families, I think. But it is interesting, like, we've heard a lot about this just being, you know, it was always going to be what happened to Bethpage because New York fans are just like this. They're like this in every sport. And we kind of heard Alistair there talking about the baseball, about the fact that he's heard a lot of kind of similar stuff with the baseball. And we had a comment in on WhatsApp from Mark. And he said he went to a Jets game a couple of years ago. Jets, I think that's NFL, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, New York.
And he said, Joe Flacco was quarterback for them, and to date, I've yet to see a worse level of abuse aimed at their own player than this instance. New York fans are horrible. Amazed a Ryder Cup was allowed to be played there. So there's a little bit of an element like, should this have been more expected?
What was interesting about Bethpage Black is that it's on, I think it's Long Island, and it's, I think, historically been kind of a very open place to go and watch golf, affordable, I suppose, to a certain extent, as much as golf can be. But the tickets for the Ryder Cup were so expensive that it was just like really rich finance bros were a lot of the crowd. And it just, it wasn't perhaps people who would ordinarily be going to watch your kind of local golf tournaments. It wasn't the fans who are there supporting golf, if you get me, as much as it could have been. Yeah, it's a weird one because, especially, I think in an ideal scenario, Bethpage Black would have been a gorgeous Ryder Cup venue. I don't think they were set up properly. I think there's Keegan Bradley can hold his, you know, head up and say that was
he
wrong.
Did, to be fair.
Yeah,
exactly.
But I also wonder, like, because the US Open, the tennis is held in New York every year, and like it's a similar. You're not as close in tennis. Obviously, like, the stadium is bigger, you're further away. But it's similarly quiet when people are taking their serves and they're playing the game. And it got me thinking, like, we hear some abuse at tennis, but it's not to the same level. Like, you'd never hear those kind of personal attacks.
Yeah.
And it would be a venue to do it if they wanted to. So yeah. I don't think you can just go, oh, any sport held in New York is going to be like this.
No, I think it is a slight generalisation. I think it was a combination of everything. Ticket prices, maybe pricing out families, especially less families there maybe than there would have been if tickets were a bit cheaper. Drinking from early hours of the morning, the fierce rivalry built up. And the fact that the difference between the American and the European team in the lead up, that the European team kept going on about, you know, we're a band of brothers. It's a lot of the same. It's basically nearly, apart from the twins, which switched, the Højgaard twins, basically the exact same team since Roman 23. You know, we all support each other on tour. We're all friends. We have a great captain. We're really united. This is our time, our place. And the Americans were like, we're going to beat their ass.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, okay, but how? Yeah. You need to be united as a team first to do that. You can't just go in and say, we are better than them on paper, which perhaps they are. You know, the singles maybe proved that in an individual element on the Ryder Cup Sunday, the Americans took advantage of it more. But this is a team-based competition.
Yeah. I also think the fact that they had a nationalism to get behind, you know, they were like, let's go USA. They don't have the same that, like, they don't have that at the tennis in the same way. It's a lot of different nationalities. Mm. Anyway, we've been chatting for ages. I'm so sorry. But let's play another clip from Rory, who you were chatting to, what he thought about the Ryder Cup abuse.
What did you think of the American crowd?
Oh, I thought they were bad, to be fair. Like, I wouldn't watch the Ryder Cup as much as watch other things, but it caught me by surprise, to be fair, whenever you could hear them all fucking talking.
And have you ever been at a football match or a rugby match where the crowd has crossed the line like that?
Yeah, but I feel like in football, it's kind of more accepted, so it is like you hear McIlroy, they're supposed to kind of hold themselves a bit of a higher standard. So, but I don't know. I feel like it doesn't really have a place in any of it, but it's just more accepted in football. So it is.
I'm gonna let Eve go off on this in a second, but I do just want to read you. It's in a similar vein. In the Telegraph, James Cargan was talking about a column he read. Sorry, and he goes, one columnist. This is about the Ryder Cup. One columnist wrote off the significance of the hecklers here, comparing it to football, whose competitors have to put up with much worse. Fine. Why can the supporters who get kicks out of such barracking not go to a football game and leave golf alone? It has long been a part of football, but it has not and should not be in golf. Now, Eve, we have limited amount of time, so I would encourage you to get this point across as quickly as possible, but
yes,
please, hit us with it.
football has a bad reputation. And I'm not going to say it's not been earned. You know, football hooliganism, especially in the UK, you know, back in the day, very well documented. We don't want to return to those times. But I feel it's gotten a lot better and it's a lot safer to go to football matches nowadays. Getting rid of a lot of the standing areas probably helped. Now you have, if you have standing at all at stadiums, it's in the UK especially, it's safe standing. There's no drink allowed out in the actual stands. It's only inside the concourse. I've never had an issue at a football match in terms of feeling unsafe as a fan. And the difference from an athlete's point of view between the Ryder Cup and the golf, I think many people have pointed that out, is that if somebody's hurling abuse at a football player and he's halfway up the stadium in the gods and the football player's on the halfway line, they're not going to hear it.
Yeah.
But at the Ryder Cup, it's so immediate in your face. I nearly think for footballers, the biggest issue now is online abuse, because that's instantly on your phone and people are more chronically online and chronically angry than ever before.
Do you think it's because you're expecting it as well at a football match? Like the chance.
Yeah.
We all know like the chance.
Like, I mean,
some of them slap, some of them cross the line, but they're expected.
So I was on the same day as the Ryder Cup, because I flew home in the afternoon. I was over in London at Tottenham Wolves, and the less said about that actual game, the better, because it was a horrible 1-1 draw. Mm. But, you know, the Spurs fans were, you know, singing your typical Spurs songs. There's cheering them on, a few kind of champions of Europe, which were my first time back since we won the Europa League, so that was nice. But then, you know, we conceded. And then it was the Wolves fans' turn to be, you know, can we play every week? You're shit. Stuff like that, which is fair. And I'd expect that. And no one gets angry. That what I take issue always with is, and this happens a lot when teams are doing badly, is that they'll start booing their own players. And that's a very immediate, like, lads, it's not helping anybody. It's not this, it's such a different level of abuse compared to what we saw. And it's so unexpected in the golf.
Yeah, and it's so personal. I think that's like,
yeah,
that's the main, what you said there about how close people get. I feel like that hasn't been discussed that much in the wake of this abuse. And to me, it's one of the most obvious factors. Like Mick on WhatsApp, he spoke about it as well. He said, I did notice how strategically, he puts that in quotes, the fan areas were placed and too close to the golfers. The fact that a beer could hit Rory and his wife just exemplifies this. There needs to be a far greater separation put between spectators and golfers generally, not just at the Ryder Cup.
Yeah. No way.
No way. Really? You don't agree?
No, not for just one. Like, this is the first time that we've seen a problem with that. Like,
it is the first time, though.
If it's been working so far, like, that's probably one of the coolest things about going to a golf tournament. Like, you can get up close, you can follow whoever you want because it's kind of free roaming and it's that little bit of respect. And like, if it's policed well enough, we should be able to do that. There's no reason, I think, that you should be put away up in a stands for something that works so well. And it's such a part of following golf.
And golf, like, it's unique. It's the only professional sport where you can stand within, you know, 2 club lengths, 2 feet of a player. But I do think, like, this isn't that new. That's the thing. Like, this is definitely one of the worst instances of the abuse. But when I was reading up about it, like, we had Scheffler talking about it when back in 2024, his playing partner Bob McIntyre got like hurled abuse. Yeah. And Scheffler was just kind of like, I think it's part of it. People have a tendency to say things that are dumb. It's like, he was like, I can think of lots of things that have been said to me. But it is like, case in point, that they're close enough to be heard and it's close enough to make it really personal. And I agree. Like, I think it would be really sad if we lost that element to golf, because even at the Irish Open, like, the amount of kids running around who get so close to their heroes, and like, that's so unique to the sport and not something you'd see anywhere else. But I think if this continues and they can't get rid of it through enforcement, which we've spoken about earlier in the pod, they should do a better job at. But like, maybe that is
I don't think it'll continue, though. I feel like this was a real anomaly.
Kigo on Instagram, when asked how can we stop toxic fan culture, said it'll stop as soon as they land in Limerick.
Love that.
Yes, well, I do think the Europeans will be so at lengths to show that they're not like the Americans in 2 years' time.
Yeah.
And they'll want to prove that we are so different and that's disgusting, that I think they'll even go to further lengths to show.
Back to football, Eve, sorry, I wanted to ask you one question. Do you think the fact that you can't drink in the stadiums is a big help?
I think so. I mean, I like having my couple drinks before the match starts, and maybe at halftime if it's boring enough that I can, you know, I don't care about missing the final 5 minutes of the first half. I don't see if there's any great benefit in allowing drinking in the stands for a football match. Now, I'm going to a Borussia Dortmund game in the new year. And I know that in Germany, in the Bundesliga, you are allowed drinks in the stands. I'll be interested to see how the atmosphere differs. Now, I don't, you know, the Germans are a very serious people. So maybe they're being very, very organised. Very sensible and organised about their drinking.
It would never get rowdy.
Exactly. Whether it would, I mean, I can't imagine like a North London derby and with drink involved, I think there would be deaths, like actual murders. So
this is why football has a reputation.
Yeah, I know.
But you guys also asked Alistair about the drinking. So whether that kind of, I actually don't know why I keep introing these. You were the ones chatting to him. What did you ask Alistair?
Let's just hear from Alistair.
Yeah, okay. Play it, please, Broda.
Yeah, I think drinking probably definitely has something to do with it. It can bring out the worst in a lot of people.
You can bring drink into rugby matches here in Ireland, but you can't to GAA matches. What do you think of that?
I think it's like, it's very much each to their own stadium. It's kind of knowing your crowd, knowing the kind of sport. Like, GAA is very, can be very parochial and local, so I think it can get very, you can get very invested. I think as Irish people, we're not generally leaned towards very harsh reset matches, or at least at a high level. Whereas in rugby, it's a lot more separated from the players.
Can I first of all say shout out to the Dart?
Yes.
In the background of all of these clips.
Pier Station.
Oil it up, lads, for the love of God.
Oh my God. Can somebody at Dublin City Council, if anyone from Dublin City Council is listens to our podcast, is there anything you can do?
Please? We need help. That's like our prime location for getting people as well.
Yeah.
As they're coming in the entrance. Is that where you were, in Trinity?
Yeah, the gym, yeah.
Yes. As they're walking past, they can't escape you.
No, we were very annoying about it.
Yes. I do think it's interesting, he kind of brought in how he watches the rugby and that it's allowed there, and you know, whether it should be brought into the GAA stadiums. In May 2024, when Leinster were playing Northampton in Croke Park, it was one of the kind of first big games there, the Journal put up a poll and they asked people if fans should be allowed to bring drink into the stands, because obviously it's allowed normally at rugby games. In the Aviva, we can bring drink in. In Croke Park, it's not. 63% said no. And these were rugby fans who were going, you know, who normally would be okay with this. But in this stance, they were like, no, it can't be arsed. And we put up our own kind of question on Instagram saying, should drink be allowed in GAA stadiums? And we shared it on the GAA account and the rugby account. So it was kind of getting fans of both. And in that, 73% said no as well. So I think it's interesting that a lot of people, I don't know if they, well, from a lot of the comments, they do think drink is a contributing factor. But also, they don't want, I don't know whether they don't want to bring it into GAA stadiums specifically because of tradition, and I'm sure we'll get all into that, or if it's the fact that they don't want drink at any sporting events.
I think Caroline on Instagram put it quite well. She goes, look at the behaviour of fans who were drunk and belligerent at the Ryder Cup and then ask the question again. You want to go drink all through a match, watch it in the pub. I think that's basically my opinion on it. It's like when you're at a concert sometimes and people are constantly going back and forth trying to get a drink from the bar and you're just being moved, and it's very annoying if someone's keeping on leaving from your seat. Like, I've never been to a rugby match at the Aviva, so I haven't experienced people kind of constantly up and down maybe to the bar, because whenever I've been there for the football, like, you try to go out and they're like, nope,
yeah,
finish your drink here.
No, it is annoying, and a lot of people said that as well. Jimmy said, nope, go to any rugby match in the Aviva and it's ruined by the drinking, up and down out of their seats without a care for the actual game in play. And somebody replied to that. I don't know what his name is, because his name on Instagram is Pokey Popeye. But he said, totally agree. The last three matches in the Aviva have been ruined with the constant back and forth to the bar. I'm not going anymore due to this. And I do actually think that's a fact. Like, I didn't go to that famous Champions Cup, well, infamous actually, semi-final between Leinster and Northampton where Leinster lost, because I was like, I can't be arsed. Like, I know what the atmosphere is going to be like. Now, Brona actually said the atmosphere at that was fantastic, but the case is that a lot of the time you can't even see what's going on, because Jerry Thornley talks about it all the time, but the queues of people standing in the aisle trying to get back from getting a pint or trying to go get a pint, and if you're sitting in your seat, I've actually had it where I can't see what's happening on the pitch,
right?
And it's just like, well, what's the point? I may as well watch it in a pub or watch it at home and I'll get to see the rugby better.
Because I think what prompted this whole conversation about alcohol specifically, it was the fact that since the NFL was in Ireland, the drink was allowed in the stands in Croke Park for the first time. So, Rachel, I presume you've been to All-Ireland finals probably in Croke Park, like big games.
Yeah.
do you think it would have been improved the atmosphere if there was drink there at all?
No way. No. I definitely don't agree. And it was real divisive on whether, when we put out that question, whether people think you should be allowed to drink at GAA games or not, or like bring drink into the stands. Obviously, you can get it before, you can get it at halftime, you can get it after, but keep it that way. Like, the atmosphere at like hurling and football games is already brilliant. Allowing people to take drink into their seats isn't going to add anything. It might just take away, because you've got people coming up and down, and like, it's such a quick sport, like 35 minutes a half. It's not like the NFL where, I mean, they're pottering on the sideline for ages in between plays, and like, yeah, it comes with the culture of the game that you kind of have to kill time. Keep it out of it. Like, it's, if you want to have a few drinks before, great crack, and like, that's part of the ritual of going to games. Like, you'll have a few pints before. I don't even usually get one in the stadium, because I'm like, there's no point. You might as well just sit down.
You'll miss the half of the sit second down, half.
Like. Yeah, and then like potter around and then go to the bar after. It's not going to add anything, and it might just take away.
Do you think GAA fans would be rowdy with drink?
No. Not rowdier than they'd already be.
Yeah,
because
like,
it's only going to be adding one or two drinks. Like, people are drinking before. The people who are going to drink at a match are drinking before, they might be getting a pint at halftime, and they're drinking after. So you're only going to add like two or three drinks to that mix anyway. If anything, it'll just mean people are going up and down to the bathroom that little bit more. So like, they're going to get in people's way when you're trying to watch the game. I don't think it would get too rowdy. Obviously, you're going to have maybe one or two that will take it too far, but that one or two will take it too far in any circumstance.
Yeah, and also they won't be heard, because again, same as football, the stadium's so big, there's so many people. It's not like they can really do that much damage, except to maybe the few people who they annoy around them. But I asked you this before we started recording, but I was wondering, like, why did the GAA ever ban it in the first place? As in, maybe it was just they felt it wasn't necessary.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know if it was a ban or if it was just like, this is not what we're doing, and then they just never introduced it. Like, I'm not sure on that, but yeah. Keep it that way.
Nuala on Instagram said, no, leave the drink out of Crow Park. Just give non-drinkers the peace to enjoy our games. The mixed supporters is a gift we must treasure, and no alcohol in the stands helps this. And I think that's a really good point that no one else had brought up. The fact that it's not like football, where there is oftentimes, you know, security guards between the sections and the fans are not allowed to even see each other sometimes, because it can get violent in football. In GAA, you don't have that culture. And it would be a shame to see anything rowdy or untoward happen when it's all usually very pleasant.
And this year, I think especially, we saw a lot of people, from my own experience from Cork, maybe that mightn't be as into the sport as they would be, because the atmosphere at the games was so good, they were going. We saw a lot of flares in the crowd, and that's class. You know, it creates an unreal atmosphere. But if those people who are just coming from the atmosphere were allowed to drink then during the game, you'd be wondering, like, oh, will they then just spend a good bit of the extra time at the bar coming up and disrupting people because they're not there for the game itself, they're just there for the atmosphere? It's fair enough, like, they've every right to be there, but adding that incentive of opening up the bar, it's just going to take away.
Yeah, well, I think you see that in the rugby specifically. Like, you've got a lot of people who go for the crack, which is great. Like, if they're enjoying the sport and they enjoy their night out, like, fantastic. But then they don't watch the rugby. They're only there to drink, and they are, I mean, you can't label them all as that way, but it feels like they are massively the problem, that you don't have rugby fans watching, you just have people who are there for the crack and for the night out, and the bar facilitates that. But Rory, again, he had a slightly different view on this about why drink maybe should be allowed.
And do you think drink has anything to do with that, like fueling the crowds?
It probably does, but at the same time, you kind of have to let them enjoy themselves, so you can see it from both sides. Personally, I wouldn't mind if there was a loud beer in the stand, but like, you can understand why they don't let them anyway. So if it was going to be that way, it was going to be that way, because I know plenty of people that can go out and they can have a load of drink and they're not going to go and shout random abuse at people that they don't know. So I feel like you have to be in that sort of mindset anyway if you're going to do it. Like, so
I think that is a good point. Like, yeah. But then I think drink always encourages you to be bolder.
I feel like if you want to go see a sporting event and also get really, really pissed, just go to the darts.
I want to go to the darts, actually. That looks like great.
I tried to get tickets last year and I couldn't get them for in Dublin, so I'm going to try again this coming year. That's a night out. There's an acceptance that this is the crowd you're going to get. And I know that there are maybe sometimes it crosses the line. There's this incredible moment a few years ago where this darts player, Gerwyn Price, came on, back on stage after a break. This is at the Ali Pali for the World Championships, with a big pair of headphones on to try and block out the crowd chanting. And I was remember sitting watching it and I was going, if you win this next leg, incredible move, and you're, this is going to be cool. If you lose, you're going to look like a right idiot. And he lost. But yeah, like there's a time and a place and a context for when and what sports you can engage with in different ways. I think golf, very traditionally a gentleman's sport, you take issue with that in whatever way you will. But for something like Shane Lowry's final putt to retain the Ryder Cup, the tension of that moment, the pressure on it, you would have hated if it was ruined because at the exact moment he hit it, someone had shouted out something horrible and personal and rude and mean at him.
Yeah.
You know?
But I think Rory's point is that a person who is likely to do that... Ooh, sorry guys, I don't know what's happening in our studio with
there's
the microphones.
There's construction work everywhere.
There is construction work all over this building. But Rory's point was that someone who might shout in the middle of Lowry's putt would do it anyway.
Which I accept to a certain extent. I think, unfortunately, when you have an atmosphere that's as heightened as it is anyway, maybe it's always going to happen.
Yeah. We are 40 minutes into this podcast, ooh, which we always manage to do, don't we? We like to chit-chat. So I was going to read out some more comments, but I'm not. I'm just going to get your final word in the studio. What are your thoughts? I don't even know what the question is, but...
Don't change the layout of golf. Leave it as it is.
Okay.
But maybe just if those circumstances happen again, police it better. And do not allow drink in the stands at GA matches.
What about rugby and football?
I don't care.
All right, Eve.
I think we Americans need to go for like singing lessons. They need to get their own proper chance. They need to start watching some football matches, from Premier League football matches, take notes of what people are singing and make their own ones to support their own team, so that in a dare manner in what, 2 years' time, they can actually be supporting their own players and not just abusing our ones.
Yeah, agreed. I can't remember what I was going to say.
If I asked you about taking away the drink at rugby games, what would you say?
Yeah, I actually think I would be happy with it being taken away. I think keep it in the way you said. I'd like it before the game and I'd like it at halftime and potentially after, but you're usually hightailing it out of there afterwards anyway. But me and Brona were talking about this earlier. Usually when we go to a rugby game, because we're both rugby fans and we like watching the action, we buy 2 to 3 pints before we go in and we carry them in the little carrier and you sit down and you're in your seat for the full game then. Yep. And you don't have to get back up and you can enjoy the best of both worlds. So I like having them in the stands from that point of view, but I think the bar should be closed while the game is in play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that you can't get up and go buy another drink because it ruins it. It just does. So that is my word on the studio. We're sorry about the background noise, but we hope you enjoyed our podcast anyway, and we will be back next week with more Word on the Street.
I think they'll go all the way to the final, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. I believe in my county and I suppose they're good at football, they just have to believe in themselves.
I love playing 12, I love playing 10, I love being on the pitch, to be honest.
Are you confident?
Absolutely not.
No! Thank you for all the supporters, thank you for the team, thank you France. Merci la France, merci les baguettes, merci les croissants. Je vous aime, I love you.